Want to start, Jason, with that Sunday nighter. Pretty good football game. We get to overtime and the first loss of the season for the New England Patriots. But I was thinking of you the whole time watching because you were talking, while people are, oh, Peyton Manning, when's he going to be back? You were one of the first guys, I think, on the record saying, hey, listen, this guy's better. Peyton may as well be done because his best is behind him and they're going to be able to manage things better with this guy.
Yeah, and it's not just about the pass game. I think people forget how the placement of the quarterback and the perceived mobility of the quarterback and the ability of the quarterback to move the pocket, what a huge role all of that plays in Gary Kubiak's run game, and that's supposed to be the bread and butter of this team. They brought Kubiak in because of that run game, because they knew Peyton Manning was near the end. Now, Peyton didn't want to do it, couldn't do it, didn't like being under center at all. Well, when he's in shotgun or he's in pistol, that changes the complete tenor and nature of what they want to do with their run action. It takes it away. And Peyton can't move the pocket, and he can't boot. He didn't like to do it, and understandably so. But it doesn't mean that this still can't be a much better functional offense all the way around with somebody else in there who can do it and who does have a little bit of mobility and can – you know, make you worry when he waggles out there what he's going to do with the ball. And he does bring defenders with him, and he does open things up for other people. And I think after doing pretty much nothing all year, I think the last 2 weeks, Hillman and C.J. Anderson have combined for like almost 350 yards and like four touchdowns. So that is their offense. And the quarterback just don't mess it up. Well, he has one turnover in his last two games. You know, Peyton was averaging two picks per game. So it's just it's a completely different template. And the defense is good, and maybe they get Ware back. You know, they lost a couple safeties yesterday. That obviously hurts. We'll have to see how long T.J. Ward in particular is out for. But this is who they want to be, and this is who they are now, and there's no reason to go back. And we're going to see in a couple weeks, you know, Peyton has been kind of, right, he didn't show up to the first game, and then he didn't watch that game from the sidelines, and that's fine. You know, that boot will be off in a couple of weeks, then he's going to want to play. And that's when it comes to a head, and that's when somebody's going to tell him no for the first time in his professional life.
Wow. And you know what? If that was a statement win for the Broncos, how devastating was the loss for New England, especially given that Gronk was carted off late?
Yeah, I think it's more the actual physical carnage than the loss. I mean, look, were they driven to win in another game and go undefeated and, you know, 19-0 all the way through or 20-0, whatever it turns out to be? Sure, but they know just how difficult that is from personal experience. And the chances are they were going to lose a game somewhere along the line. And let's face it, they've been the first eight, you know, wins compared to the last three or games or whatever, it's been a lot different, right? They barely got by the Giants. They barely got by the Bills. We've been talking about it for weeks. The attrition was catching up to them. So losing a game always stings. But you could just tell as that game wore on which team had more depth. You know, for 2.5 quarters, the Broncos really were barely staying on the field with the Patriots. But that's not when the game ends. And from the middle of the third quarter into overtime, there was really one team playing and the other team starting to cling for dear life because they couldn't stop the run game and they were wearing out and they were running out of bodies at key positions again. And they didn't have anybody to throw the ball to and they were stacking the line against LeGarrette Blount and it just sort of was what it was. Now, moving forward, look, they're going to have to go into a different mode for the next month. And it's going to be about managing people's health. They've got a four-game lead, right? They've won 10 games. Nobody else in the division's won more than six. What, the Jets have won six? They're going to win that division, and they're going to host a home playoff game no matter what. They've got to fight for the bye, but the number one seed isn't as important. And if they get the bye, the Gronk injury, I think, is going to be – he may miss a week or two. From what I'm hearing, pending an MRI, but shouldn't be a long-term absence. They still are hopeful Amendola's back, if not next week, the week after. Jamie Collins is week to week. I think he's back next week. Hightower, I'm sure they'll take every precaution with his knee, but that looks like an MCL sprain in the maybe in the range of 2 to 3 weeks and not more. And then Edelman, they hope, is back for the start of the playoffs after a bye. So could this be a team that it gets a little rocky? They simplify things. They just kind of muddle through and bide some time until the playoffs. It certainly could be. The hard charging, you know, let's blow everybody out and try to win every game. You know, not that they still don't want to win, but they've really got to manage that roster now. And it's going to be about seeing what some of these depth players can do and giving them an opportunity and seeing if one or two new targets emerge for Brady in case Edelman's not ready and in case Amendola gets hurt again.
Seattle moves into a wild card with their victory over Pittsburgh. That was a big victory for them, and all of a sudden, all the troubles they've had doesn't really matter. They're 6-5 and looking like a playoff team.
Yeah, and I've been kind of saying for a while here, you know, look, you can't write these guys off, and things are going to be kind of muddled and are going to be up in the air for a while in terms of wild card situations. And in this year where we have not seen many teams grab the bull by the horns, who's going to do it in late November or December and pull away? You know, is it going to be Tampa? Is it going to be Minnesota? Is it going to be Philadelphia? You know, or is it going to be Seattle? You know, of that sort of midway group, or the Bears? Who has the best pedigree? Well, Seattle. Who's been down this road before? Who has that experience? Who can flick that switch when they have to? You would think it's Seattle. Now, they've got to clean some things up. I mean, you know, they're lucky they got the four interceptions. And I say lucky. I mean, a couple of them, the one ball slipped out of Ben's hand. I mean, I thought, you know, they made some great plays on the ball, too. But the only way they stopped the Steelers all day long was with picks. I mean, they threw for almost 500 yards. They tore that secondary apart. They didn't even try to run the ball in the second half. They just attacked, you know, what used to be the best secondary in the NFL. They're going to have to figure that out. They now have to play without Jimmy Graham for the rest of the year, and he made some huge plays in that game, and he's a guy who, say what you want about his production level with them, is still a unique weapon with a size, speed, skill quotient that not many people, you know, frankly, in the world have. So they got a big game against Minnesota this week. If they can grind that out, they're right there, you know. And Arizona was a big win. You know, had Arizona slipped up there against the 49ers, and you know, I don't know that they were the better team yesterday, but they certainly found a way to win. Then all of a sudden, maybe the door would be pried open a little bit more for a wild Seattle scramble for the division. But if Seattle gets in, you have to fear them, you know. Let's face it, if they get in and play the winner of the NFC East, Washington, I mean, I know Washington's been good at home this year, but I think they'd like their chances, you know. So I haven't given up on the Seahawks. I won't give up on the Seahawks. Russell Wilson's been incredible the last 2 weeks. He plays best when the chips are down. And, you know, if they can scratch one out against Minnesota, they're all the more formidable.
Jason Lockenfor, our NFL insider here on Boomer and Warner in the morning. I asked you on Thursday, I guess it was, your thoughts on the best 6-5 team, 5-6 team. And all of a sudden, they may not make the playoffs in the end, or they may not get much done in the playoffs, but you almost have to tip your cap. The Houston Texans, they looked like they didn't know how to play football at one point during this season. They've won 4 in a row. The Colts, without luck, they've won 3 in a row. You brought up Kansas City. They've won 5 straight. Minnesota, 4 of 5. There's some teams out there that don't have the best records on paper, but they're making some noise.
Yeah, Houston and Kansas City are the most intriguing to me. And I believe if the playoffs started today, they'd both be in. And Pittsburgh would now be out. And obviously there's a lot of time to go. What they've done defensively, I mean, these were two teams that if you watch them in the middle of October, you would say, what abject failures. Like, what? Wow. Like, they're just getting manhandled all over the place. You know, you had with Houston, you had J.J. Watt showing up. And with Kansas City, you know, you had the young corner Marcus Peters, and you had the defensive, you had the outside linebacker Justin Houston showing up, and really nobody else. And what they've done collectively to ratchet things down, and both quarterbacks. I mean, Alex Smith hasn't thrown an interception in like 270 attempts or something like that now. I mean, it's parts of 8 games. And Brian Hoyer on the year has a quarterback rating of nearly 100. He's played in 8 games, thrown for 2,000 yards with like 15 touchdowns and 5 interceptions, and no one even talks about the guy. It's like he doesn't exist because he got benched, you know, in the third quarter of the first game of the year. They've had a lot to do with the resurgence, and you have to take those teams, you know, pretty seriously right now. The Chiefs just keep running the ball. I mean, it was Spencer Ward last week, you know, because Kendrick West was hurt. Obviously, they lost Jamal Charles for the season weeks ago. Yeah, those teams still kind of stand out to me. Kansas City in particular, you know, they've got a real win streak going now. You know, and if Denver hadn't gone to Brock Osweiler, Kansas City, you know, if they'd stayed with Peyton Manning, Kansas City probably is headed to division title. You know, I mean, I think that's what people are probably missing, the whole equation. Like, if Dave Peyton just got his way and kept wearing the boot through the week and playing on Sunday and trying to gut it out, they're probably looking at a couple more losses, and Kansas City hasn't lost. The Chiefs have not lost since the Royals qualified for the World Series.
Wow.
The Philadelphia Eagles have lost three in a row. Chip Kelly, obviously the man in the hot seat. Does he survive this with the Eagles?
He survives unless he doesn't want to survive. He survives unless he takes his ball and goes home to college. I have not heard anything from my sources that ownership is pushing him out. They just gave him the entire building. They just recommitted to him, right? They committed to him 2 years ago and gave him everything just short of total power. He wins 20 games the first 2 years, doesn't want Howie Roseman as his GM anymore, doesn't want him involved in football operations at all other than contracts, and he wants final say of everything. All right, Chip, you got it. Like, this just happened, you know, 10, 11 months ago. This is a guy who's stuck by Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, Andy Reid. You know, people forget Andy Reid. Like, they think it was all, you know, five championship games and all that. You know, it was pretty rough early on for Andy Reid. I mean, he was a coming out of nowhere. He wasn't even a coordinator. He was a position coach. He hitches his wagon to a young Donovan McNabb. You know, the first 3-4 years there, it wasn't all wine and cheese. But he was loyal. He wanted to prize continuity. And he ended up having one of the longer tenures with any team we've seen, you know, in the last 20, 25 years. So that's the goal for Jeffrey Lurie. He wants this to work. He's all in. He's more all in now than he even was 2 years ago when he doubled back three times to pry this guy out of Oregon. He doesn't want it. He doesn't want to just call it off now and have another coaching search. You got to remember, the guys they were talking to when Chip Kelly spurned them, it was Gus Bradley, Brian Billick, and Ken Whisenhunt. I mean, you know what I mean? That's where the Eagles were in the coaching pecking order. They weren't getting the A-list guys, again, until they went back to Chip Kelly and said, yes, you can hire your own personnel guy, and yes, we'll give you almost everything you want, and, you know, here's even more money and all that stuff. He doesn't want to go back to that, but Chip just might not be cut out for this. This might not be his bag. You can't control these millionaire adults the way you can these, in many cases, poverty-ridden teenagers. It's just a completely different dynamic, and it's not working here. And there's a lot of guys in that locker room who think most of his stuff is mumbo-jumbo. Now, does that mean they don't go out there and win next week and the Skins lose to Dallas and the Giants lose again and we're talking next week and the Eagles are in, you know, first place or a half a game out or whatever? All that could happen too. But he's going to have some decisions to make about his future in the next 2 weeks. College recruiting season kicks into high gear here very soon. If he's going to jump, he needs to jump in early December to give himself time to woo players to get a head start at his college job. Everybody would want him. USC, University of Texas, would they dump Charlie Strong if they thought they could bring him in? I think they would. I hear University of Miami is willing to spend way more on a head coach than they ever have before. I don't know how much you guys follow college football. There's like 10, you know, Georgia's got an opening. I mean, there's like 10 significant jobs open right now with more to come as these coaches are fired in the coming days. I've never seen a landscape like that before. And he would be the alpha dog in that mix. So stay tuned. It'll be his call, though. If he leaves, it'll be because he don't want this.
Is it fair to just say, oh, look, I haven't had a quarterback, that's why I'm not having success in Philly, or are the problems much bigger?
Well, I'm sure he could say that, you know, and that's what Nick Saban said when it didn't work for him with the Dolphins. The difference is Rick Spielman was the GM there, and Rick Spielman and the medical staff failed Drew Brees in a physical. Hmm. Chip Kelly can't blame anybody else. Chip Kelly had close to full control the moment he walked in the door, and he had full control this year when his quarterback, Marcus Mariota, was available in the draft, and instead he made a stupid trade for Sam Bradford. You know, and it didn't flip the one he got for Bradford with his already existing one and some other stuff to move up and get Mariota. I mean, remember, when he got Sam Bradford, he couldn't wait to tell the world, I already had two teams offering me a first-round pick for Bradford. Well, you should have taken it and traded that pick and your pick and next year's pick and another pick and just gone and gotten your guy Mariota. But, you know, he's the one who wanted to keep Mike Vick in the building when he got there. He's the one who, you know, thought he could do it with Foles for a while there. He's the one who picked Sanchez. He's the one who traded for Bradford. He can't blame anybody else.
Good stuff as always, man. Good to talk to you. We'll catch up on Thursday, and do your best to enjoy the Monday Nighter.
Oh, boy, I live in Baltimore, and nobody wants to see that dog show.
There you go. Go Buck Allen. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you.
Yeah, right. See you guys.
You bet. There's Bye. Jason Lacken for our NFL Insider.